You are listening to the Magnetic Marketing Marketing Secret Gold Members Only Podcast. So what I wanted to talk about today is the concept of creating and or partnering with people that have distribution channels. And as I was thinking through this, I was thinking about, and we just did a project with Damon John, so Shark Tank stuff's kind of top ahead. But I was thinking about, like, when somebody brings a deal to Shark Tank, each of the sharks seems like they have a distribution channel they either own or they've mastered or they understand really well, right? If someone brings a clothing product to Damon, he knows how to get into retail really quick. If it's
Kevin and Damon have done the best job with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin probably has the best one,
mm-hmm,
where he really is operating a set of verticals selling. For example, he has three or four businesses that's selling to the wedding market.
Mm-hmm.
And he has all those customers commingled. And when something comes along on Shark Tank that is useful to the wedding market, you see his eyes light up.
Right. He's like, I have the distribution channel. I can go quickly.
Yep. And I can do it at very low cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because I own the customers, I already have the online media, I know how to do the offline media, I'm good to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that really is the business that he has built on the back of being on Shark Tank.
Yeah. Interesting. I would love to dissect his more. But yeah, I feel like every shark's got something, right? Damon's got retail. That's what Kevin has. Lori, if it's a QVC style product, she lights up like, oh, I know exactly, you know, 5 seconds I can have this on TV and it's running.
Yeah.
I
think now she is much more limited.
Yeah.
In that she has other people's distribution channels that she is able to put product into. QVC is one, retail is another, some particular stores that she has. That she has really good relationships. But what she does not have that Kevin has is her own distribution channels.
Mm.
That's not to say that she's not doing very well, because she is, but she is able to plug something in to somebody else's distribution channel with whom she has a good relationship.
Yeah. So I want people to understand is, I think so many people, they in business in our community, they have a product or service or something. And like, step one is they create the product service. Then step two, they start looking for, I need to go buy ads or things like that. As opposed to like flipping it around where it's like, how do we build a distribution channel where when products and services come now, we can just plug it in. Right. And so I'd love for you to talk about just helping people understand the importance of either creating or really like finding the distribution channels first, so that when the opportunities come along, you can just like Shark Tank, or just like, you know, I was able to, when we acquired Magnetic Marketing, plug it in really quickly because we have such a big distribution channel. We can plug things in quickly because we started focusing on that first. You know what I mean?
Well, that's right. You know, the products and services are necessary, but starting with them in any business is really a big mistake. You want to be market driven, not product driven. And then you want to think about, how are we going to get this thing sold? Or better, what distribution channel can we build or can we tap into, and both, that needs something we can make, that can sell something we can make. And much more powerful approach, because it takes a lot of risk and capital out of the equation. We can plug and play, and there are customers ready to buy what we go create or make or find. And you know who is really interesting in this? Joe Kosman, who I got to know pretty well late in his life. Joe, aside, he had the first TV infomercial on the air selling any kind of a get-rich course other than real estate. And it was on when in black and white television. Just as an aside. But Joe made his fortune finding products that already existed that were only being sold through one distribution channel, and that he saw a way to move to one or more other distribution channels. So he went looking for things to plug into distribution channels that he knew how to manage. So it's very much the Shark Tank conversation we just had. His claim to fame, his biggest success was with a product called the Ant Farm, which if you didn't have one as a kid, people my age all did as kids. All boys had them.
Uh-huh.
And they're like little flat, see-through plastic aquariums with dirt and ants in them. And you can see the ants tunneling and building and all that. Product was only being sold through school supply houses, and it was used by teachers in biology and earth science classes. So very small market. Osman had mastered the toy store distribution channel already. He'd had a success with a product called the Spud Gun. He'd had several successes. And when he saw the Ant Farm, he said, every boy will want to have this on the top of the dresser in his room, if for no other reason than to annoy his mother. And so he got the rights to sell the Ant Farm in every distribution channel but school supply houses. He immediately did toy stores. And he immediately did mail order, which at the time he had mastered full page ads in comic books, just as Charles Atlas had. So he was able to have million and multi million dollar successes with over 30 products, plugging them into these distribution channels, either other people's, like toy stores, or his own, like full-page ads in comic books, and then catalogs with everything he had going to the buyer of any one thing that he advertised. He would have had a field day with online, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He never really had that opportunity, but he would have had a field day with it. Very smart guy, interesting guy. So if people want to Google somebody, it's E. Joseph Kosman. And I'm sure you could find some videos of Joe on YouTube, because did you find videos of everybody on YouTube at this point?
Yep.
So, like you, so I created my own distribution, which was centered around newsletter subscribers. So, that was the organizing device. There's a, for your own business, you want an organizing device, some kind, that gets and keeps and accumulates customers with known interests that you can continue to create product for, and or that you can let other people sell their product, share revenue, or that you can go find and get product to sell to those people. So in MLM, so earliest business experience was in Amway. For the corporation, MLM is really a organizing device, get and keep wholesale customers. A company like Amway, Shackley, Herbalife, Mary Kay, well over two-thirds of the revenue comes from inactive distributors. They're not doing anything except buying it wholesale and consuming. So the whole thing for the corporation is about organizing and keeping a large number of customers with whom they have direct communication and therefore own a distribution channel. And they can now come up with another new product. They can plug a product into it and know with a fairly high degree of certainty what the minimum result is going to be. And so the business is not what it appears to be to the casual observer, and it's a different business for the corporation than it is for the distributors. They're not in the same business at all. So for me, the organizing device was the newsletter, because that's a distribution channel. I'll have readers who are paying for it, so they will pay attention to it, that I have a good relationship with, so a great many look forward to the envelope, and I can now put other stuff in the envelope that sells stuff to them. Separately mailed to them. Then, of course, along came the internet. My life divides literally in half, half before, half after, which now allowed for an expansion of that distribution channel to those same customers. Now you had more ways you could communicate with them, more ways that you could sell to them. And of course, the bigger you build this, the more you're able to segment it. Some portion of these people will have a keen interest in A. Others will have no interest in A, but they will have a keen interest in B, et cetera, et cetera. So when you have that, now go plug things into it. The actual catalog industry is all about that. They own a distribution channel of their own that goes to people who will pay attention to it and buy from it. Now they can plug into it. And in some cases, so like you take my pillow. So all the advertising that MyPillow does on TV benefits a bunch of catalog companies who carry MyPillow products in their catalog. So he's got their distribution channel. They've got his product, which is heavily advertised. So a certain number of their customers who have seen the TV ads 5,000 times and not bought from them, now they're ordering something from the Signals catalog, and they decide, what the hell, I'll finally try the MyPillow, and they add it to the order. Retail, same way. He got thrown out of some stores because of his politics, but before that, MyPillow was, you know, doing very well in like Bed Bath & Beyond and Walmart. So there's this rising tides lifting boats effect when you are in multiple distribution channels with the same product, because see it over here, but then they buy it over there. They see it over there, over there, over there, over there, and then they buy it over here. So you want to own one, and you want to create cooperation, productive relationships with as many others as you can. But when you are ready to reintroduce something or introduce something to the market, you have all of this already in place to drop it into.
Mm-hmm. I feel like in the internet world, a lot of people understand this because they're building email lists or following on Instagram or YouTube, or whatever. But I'm curious, like, whenever I have a chance to work with smaller, like, local businesses and things like that, I feel like this is more foreign for them, like how they can create their own. I'm curious what you've seen work inside of the Kennedy community for the smaller local businesses to build out a distribution channel as well.
Well, those who get it, and there are those who get it, do all the same things pretty much that we would do on a national level, on a local level. So the financial advisor goes and befriends the bookstore owners and the Barnes & Noble managers in his area. And three times a year, when he comes out with a new book, he makes the rounds. He gives them 24 copies, 36 copies that they can sell and keep all the money. He really only cares about the lead. Barnes & Noble managers have a certain amount of flexibility to do this. Local authors. Maybe he gets to promote an author event. So that's a distribution channel for him. He has a package of information for hirees moving into retirement community. And he makes it available to all the retirement community. Finds one that he forms a working relationship with, and he basically moves in their official financial advisor. And three times a year, he does a special seminar at the retirement community. Gives them an article every month, put their newsletter, and he's using them as a distribution channel. In these cases, he's not so much pushing a product out and getting money for it as he is pushing things out to get leads from it. When I did the Entrepreneur Be Your Own Boss infomercial many moons ago, one of the testimonials, I can't remember her name. She had started her cupcake business, Entrepreneur's Report, to start a cupcake business. And she had a retail location, what she started with, in the Atlanta underground, big shopping and restaurant area. But she formed a relationship with a company that goes around to all the office buildings and arrives, kind of like a food truck, arrives with, you know, different kinds of baked goods and snacks and fruit and juice. And somebody's got it all, a little cart, and they work the office tower. Now she had that distribution channel. By pure serendipity, a buyer for the area Walmart stores came to her retail location, bought cupcakes and liked them. Said, "You think you can supply our Sam's Club locations with cupcakes?" Now she had to open a non-retail location, a production facility, started with the Sam's Clubs, and then got in all the Walmart stores per region. That business eclipsed the retail location. She was just starting to fool around with direct-to-consumer marketing nationally instead of locally, shipping cupcakes world. A bigger and bigger and bigger part of the food business, part thanks to the availability of online media, offline media. So I haven't followed her since, but she had four distribution channels, and by now she's probably either got six or she's sold the company. She was really following, whether she knew it or not, she was following the same path that Debbie Fields did, who I spent some time with on speaking tour, with Mrs. Fields Cookies. Fields Cookies started with a single retail location in a mall that almost failed. But then more retail locations, then franchised retail locations, then sale in supermarkets, then a big mail order business, B2B first, as client and customer gifts, like Harry and David and others in that case. And from there, to direct to consumer, et cetera, et cetera. And the company, which started with a single retail store, Debbie sold it. I forget how big it was, and I forget how much money she sold it for, but pardon the pun, it was a lot of dough. So, same principle applies on a local business, for services or for goods, really looking for who already has contact with, relationship with, people who can be my customers too, and we're not directly competitive. And whoever that is, let's try and make a deal. In the info business, I mean, I created products specifically for existing distribution channels. There was a huge catalog of daytimers in the whiz bang appointment book and management business. And had hundreds of thousands of customers. And mailed hundreds of thousands of catalogs, and two-thirds of the catalog was for their stuff. And they were always kind of open to what else would our, you know, folks buy. And I had the first audio cassette product in their catalog that they ever had, and we lived there with it for a number of years, and it was effective telephone techniques for secretaries and reception. Built it because a lot of their customers were small business owners, practices, that sort of thing. Sold hundreds of thousands of units at $29.95 retail. Other company built a product called Ready to Go Sales Meeting, because they had sold to sales managers, everything from car dealerships and retail offices up into corporate. And everybody held sales meetings. Everybody hated preparing for them. scurrying around at the last minute looking for a book or an article or something that they could go in and teach from, understanding their customer, dealt with them on a local basis, knocking in the door and saying, how would you like a free speaker for sales meeting next week? Dumped on, created this product because that distribution channel existed. So the small business owner even has this opportunity. Look at an existing distribution channel that connects to people who could be your customer. Now you try and figure out what you've got or what you can modify or what you can make specifically for them that can let you tap that channel.
I was thinking about different examples that I was preparing for this, and there's a really fascinating one. I think he was a GKIC member back, man, probably back during the last recession, around what, 2008, 2009-ish. And he lived here locally in Boise, Idaho, so I got to see it kind of firsthand. But he started, he was a real estate agent, and he started an email newsletter. It was specifically about, it was like, get on this email newsletter to see all the most expensive homes in Boise, Idaho that are for sale each week or something. And I remember joining that newsletter, and every week he'd send out an email and would have the listings to the most expensive houses in Boise. And it was fascinating because I was in the home in the market at that time for, you know, a big home. And so every day, every week I'd look forward to this newsletter, I would get it. And eventually I ended up calling him, and he told me that over the 12 months or so he'd been building that newsletter, he had like 500,000 people in Boise. And most of them were people who were more affluent because they were looking for expensive homes. And then also people who were trying to sell their homes found the newsletter, and he started getting the most expensive listings in Boise and being able to sell them, but also to list them and going back and forth. And he became one of the biggest agents in Idaho because of this one distribution channel he built. But then on top of that, then he started selling ads to the other companies here in Boise, you know, to go out to these affluent Boise people who are looking for high-end homes. He was able to sell advertising and all these other things. And but that one little strategy of, like, again, not just doing what most real estate agents do, which is, you know, list a house in MLS and, you know, hope, try to find people to speak to, but like thinking first of building this distribution channel, like it became a profit stream, but also brought him clients. It brought him deals. He was able to sell, you know, attract people who were going to buy the best deals. And it's just like such a powerful strategy of taking something that, you know, some people are doing, but then this little tweak changed everything for him. I just think, well, it's interesting.
You're describing really a perfect example of what I've come to call info first marketing.
Mm-hmm.
In that, so if you think about most real estate agents, their marketing message essentially consists of, hey, list your home with me. And some, you know, reason for that. I'm number one. I'm number eight. I do a better job. I sell your home faster, et cetera. Or their other message is, hire me as your buyer's agent and let me find you what you want. And in any given local market, at any given time, how many real estate agents are there who are saying that exact same thing and overlapping each other in media saying that exact same thing? Well, there's a crap load. So when you do info first instead, and you offer and provide useful information. So it's always amused me that, like, a company is able to make money with a paid health-related newsletter at $59 a year, getting subscribers in Boise. But the Boise chiropractor or the Boise hospital is not smart enough to copy this on the local level. Here in our market, part thanks to conversations I had with somebody, Cleveland Clinic has actually got in this business. Cleveland Clinic has copied, they haven't done it very well, but they have copied the national alternative health kind of newsletter publishers which there are many, and created the men's health letter by the Cleveland Clinic, which they sell. And, of course, they don't care about the money from it, because they now have a newsletter that they can continue to use as a promotion channel and a distribution channel for every kind of health test that males should get, and driving them in for this test, that test. If you don't have a doc, it will get you a doc, et cetera. And they've got people paying attention because they paid $89 to get the newsletter every month. Now, they aren't one-tenth as smart about this as you or I, but they're smart enough to at least have finally done it. So, you know, one of the things that about this that I think is true is that what you see being done nationally by marketers, advertisers in your space, and by direct response advertisers, so you know they can count, so they know what the results are. You should be able to do locally. And why wouldn't you model that? And you don't see it, you know, done a lot. So why isn't the home improvement contractor in Boise smart enough to copy the Sunset Awnings campaign? And if Sunset Awnings can do television, generate leads for their dealers all across the country, including in Boise, you should be able to afford to do local TV. Economics are not quite as good, but you don't have the overhead of Sunset Awnings either. And yet you don't see it done, right? Like with financial advisors. I've had them in coaching groups, and we get some of them fixed, but you will still see the majority of the local financial advisors. They are advertising on TV or radio, in the newspaper. Their offer is some version of call us up, get a free financial review, see if your portfolio is okay, if you're positioned properly for retirement, etc. But Fisher Investment, the biggest money manager in their industry, who advertises nationally, uses every media, direct mail, radio, TV, print, never makes that offer. Their offer is always info first. You have $500,000 or more to invest for your retirement. Let us give you these three retirement investment guides. Here's the titles, and here they are. Let us give you this free book and DVD, and here's the titles, and here they are. And I'll be screaming at a group of financial advisors, why wouldn't you copy Fisher? Why on earth wouldn't you be doing info first when you see Fisher doing info first? And you know, you get blank looks, of course, from most of them. You have to beat them up pretty good, and you have to really explain it. But hey, Fisher deliberately does what I call a low threshold initial offer. And the local financial advisor goes on TV with a high threshold offer, meaning got to get over a big barrier to say yes to that offer. So the local guy's offer is essentially, hey, come in here and sit down with people you don't know and strip yourself naked financially and show us all the dumb stuff you've been doing with your money. And we'll help you figure out how to take care of it better. Well, that's kind of unappealing. I mean, do you really want to go do that? And you're going to sit there with your wife and you don't know what the guy's going to say. And no, I don't want to do that. But I will respond to Fisher. Even though I know the guy on the phone is probably going to try and get me to do more, but I'll respond to Fisher, and I'll get the free guides. Then I go through the free guides, and I go, gee, this makes a lot of sense, and this guy sounds like a good guy, and like they're running a good company, and so what's the next step they want me to do? Well, they want me to do, so I'll do that, and then ultimately, you get to an appointment, and they take all your mattress money, and they put it under management. And you see this in category after category after category. The national marketer, national direct response advertiser, doing one thing, and the local equivalents of that business doing something entirely different, less effective, and dumber.
So interesting. I was just thinking about this concept as well as you're speaking. And there's a guy that's in our inner circle that he sells CBD and CBD related products. His name is Justin Benton, and he's an awesome guy. But, you know, with that type of product in that category, he can't get traditional distribution like Facebook run ads, YouTube run ads. So he can't do any of the traditional things any of us are doing. And it was actually a newsletter we did a couple months back talking about starting a print newsletter. And he was like, well, how do I start a print newsletter? And so he started a print newsletter, like a 4-page print newsletter, and he found all the chiropractors around, whatever. And he started this print newsletter sending out to chiropractors as a way to market to them, to get them to market his products to their clients. And he's been doing it now for the last 5 or 6 months. And he, you know, built this distribution channel from scratch that can't get shut down by, you know, any of the tech companies. And he's being directly to these people now who then can distribute his products. And he's thriving with it like crazy. But it was, again, coming down to like, how do I build the distribution channel to get directly to the people I need to be? And not be necessarily reliant on, you know, these third parties that can shut you down or take you away. Like you lose your distribution channel, your business is gone overnight. And I think it's just,
well, that's right. And now see what he has in place is distribution for his existing products and available distribution for some new product he comes up with or gets. And if he builds his relationship with the docs right, if he doesn't want to be in the how to build your practice business or isn't qualified to be in that business, somebody will happily step in and use his list and his endorsement and market to those chiropractors through him and happily pay him sizable money in order to do that. He may find a non-CBD product that also should be distributed through chiropractors. And he's already got them in place. So he's building a very powerful thing. And, you know, all the niches, professions, and business categories, they lend themselves to offline direct contact, direct mail. The lists are readily available, selects by size and number of employees, or, you know, things that give you an idea of are they big, are they small, that sort of thing, are all readily available. Most of these businesses don't have superpowered gatekeepers. And so it's not like going to IBM And in many cases, 25%, 30, 35% of them, their home addresses are available. So you can bypass the gatekeepers altogether. I mean, I have a client right now who markets to dentists. He mail and FedEx to dentists a lot. And he doesn't have to worry about Facebook or Instagram or Google or, you know, any of them. And the other thing about this and about offline marketing and offline distribution channels is that an awful lot of online, as you very well know, is search driven. So the only chiropractor he's going to get, if he was allowed to be in all those online places, is a chiropractor searching for CBD products to sell. And he's not going to be the only one coming up in search. He's immediately in a cluttered and chaotic and competitive environment, tends to be price commoditized. There's an enormous number of chiropractors who would not be searching for that, but who can be interested in it if you show up in the right way and tell the right story and make the right offer. By and large, there's still much more money made selling things to people who didn't know they wanted them than selling things to people who knew they wanted them. And so consumer offline is harder, but B2B, small B2B, niches is really quite easy. The lists are readily available. Select information about those lists is readily available. For the most part, they open and read their mail. You have the right economics. You can use FedEx, et cetera. And so these campaigns, like he has done for his newsletter, are fairly formulaic and relatively simple to make work.
You also, like, same time, you know, to help finance it, you know, you talked about the newsletter, the customers are financing it. He could pull on two or three advertisers into the newsletter that would completely finance it as well. And now there's no cost for the entire distribution channel. Everything now pure profit.
Yeah, cool. You can. Sometimes it's not worth doing it, but other times it is. You can do cost offset. You can create free rides. I published for, I don't know, a couple of years, Renegade Millionaire Magazine. And we had, probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 contributors who wrote for or were written about, featured in the magazine. And they paid a fee for that. Plus, they were required to buy a certain number of magazines to distribute to their herd, which they were happy to do because, look, I'm featured in this magazine. From my standpoint, I was reaching 50,000 success-oriented people in these 8 or 10 tribes, and I was getting that reach for free. I had to do a little work. I had to put the magazine together, right? But I was tapping into Charlie Brown's distribution channel with Dennis, and Billy Bob's distribution channel with plumbing company owners, et cetera, at zero cost. My content and my offers. So there's a lot of different ways to play this. The OPC, other people's customers, is often a much more valuable resource than other people's money. Now, when you raise capital or you create debt in order to go buy customers, you either owe the debt or you have sacrificed equity. If you can instead tap into other people's customers by various creative means, you don't have any debt and you haven't given up any equity. In many cases, you're going to attract by these mechanisms their best customers. So you're even reducing the find the needles in the haystack aspect of lead generation and initial customer acquisition. So if I'm a chiropractor and I get the biggest health food store in my town to distribute my newsletter in his store and or mailed to his list, by whatever means I do that, whatever reciprocity I create for him, or assistance I give him, opportunity I provide him, I'm reaching people who are spending money on alternative health products. I'm not starting with a bigger universe, I'm not spending my money on every door direct mail, and I'm not competing in a search environment, and I'm reaching people we know spend money on this. And, you know, a buyer is a buyer is a buyer. And converting non-buyers to first-time buyers is typically a very expensive proposition. So these kinds of relationships, whether local or national, are well worth figuring out, creating, and maintaining.
My last question to kind of wrap this up is just for someone who's looking at this new, if this is a new concept, new principle, do you think it's smarter for them initially to go and say, okay, who are the people that I can find that already have a distribution channel and trying to figure out how to get into those? Or is it smarter to kind of start with like, all right, what am I going to build and start focusing on building one initially yourself?
Well, the first thing feeds the second. So, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. Sometimes you have to do the first so that you have some visibility in a marketplace that makes people want to cooperate with you. But other times, don't, and be providing free information to for them to give to their customers that relieves them of some conversation they don't want to have, or that relieves them of the work of doing something that now is done for them. I don't think one is universally smarter than the other. Personally, I've almost always done both close to simultaneously as I could. But if you take when I had a niche business selling to chiropractors in chiropractic, the same exact same marketplace that you're selling to, we started with a speaker on the road and me doing some road trips and marketing very aggressively into the chiropractic profession by direct mail to fill the seminars and by full page ads in the trade journal with the schedule of the seminars for the next 3 months. And couple of months of that, and the other tribe leaders, if you will, in the niche, the practice management companies, the coaches, kind of everybody was very much aware that we were there. And then it became easy to go to some of the big dogs and say, hey, look, we're out here doing all these seminars. We're selling something that does not directly compete with what you sell. We would be very happy to put you in the resource guide we give to everybody as a free gift when they buy our program at the seminars. All we want in exchange is some kind of a shot at your folks. And we not only made those deals, but we got some of them locked in place. So every one of their new people got exposed to us. Every one of our people got exposed to them. We were invited to exhibit at some of their, and so forth. So we very quickly had 7, 8, maybe 10 really good promotion / distribution channels where our speaker could go present, where we could exhibit, where we got content into the content that they were distributing. We were better at kind of expanding our presence once we got in the door than they were at expanding their presence inside our door, which was just fine by me. And probably 50% of the revenue by the second year was driven by this network rather than by our direct marketing. But when you get visible in a niche or a small subculture, you get visible and you are seen advertising and promoting, it can be easier now to get others to want to play. So, like the rule with ordinary products, home goods, exercise devices, that kind of thing, was if you could stay on the air every day with an infomercial for 90 days, you could get the product into any retail chain you wanted to. But if you walked in cold and you weren't doing infomercials, now you had a very different kind of conversation.
You've been listening to one of our gold members only podcasts. Make sure you upgrade and become a diamond member and get access to the diamond members only podcast as well. On top of that, you'll also get access to the whole enchilada with all dance courses and so much more. So make sure you upgrade to diamond now by going to diamondupgrade.com.